Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on debt when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, which was negotiated by Moses out of Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits, benefits such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush said that what Americans want, though, is jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, or the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognize that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales, not in public business or jobs, jobs, jobs. Now, it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance and learned how to collect those benefits of the Old Covenant contract and to collect those benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, to collect them in real property instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for our free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour summary or commentary on the law in general, and it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about debt. Debt is a curse. Debt is not your friend. Debt is like heroin. It's something to be shunned. In fact, in the Bible, the word debt and debtor is mentioned probably 10 or 15 times, always in a negative context. Debt is something that you want like a cut or like a sore. It isn't that it's going to kill you. You can get cut. You can have a sore. It's painful. It doesn't feel good. You don't like it. But, you know, you live with it. I lived for many years with debt because I thought it was natural. I thought it was normal. Everybody has debt. Everybody that I knew had debt. Debt was a way of life. Like heroin is a way of life. Smoking is a way of life. Drinking is a way of life. Debt, like smoking, like drinking, is a choice that you make in life. Now, it's pretty hard to tell children to just say no to drugs when they have a medicine cabinet in the bathroom full of drugs. When mom and dad constantly consume drugs like Sudafed and aspirin and Tylenol, you know, to go the next step and say, well, but you shouldn't be using marijuana and cocaine and speed. Pretty hard to tell people don't smoke when mom and dad smoke. Pretty hard to tell children don't drink when mom and dad drink. Pretty hard to tell children don't get into debt when mom and dad have credit cards. And that's just the way life is. Now, mom and dad are drug addicts. At least here in America, they are. In fact, 80% of Americans are taking one prescription drug. Can you believe that? 80%. And if you're 65 or older, you're taking on average six. America is a nation of drug addicts. To tell people to just say no to drugs in America is preposterous. The whole damn culture is a society of druggies. Now, if you want to be a druggie, I'm not here to get you to reform. I'm not here to get you to come down the sawdust trail and give your heart to Jesus. I don't think drugs are good for me, so I swore off of drugs. I thought, well, I'll leave them for you. You can have my share. And then I've come to the same conclusion with debt. Now, I've practiced with debt. I mentioned in the series of programs that I couldn't make debt make any money for me. Now, we're encouraged to go into debt, just like we are encouraged to buy those drugs. Just watch Katie Couric or Brian Williams on the 6 o'clock news. They are drug peddlers. They're selling drugs. That's the purpose for the CBS Evening News. It's to sell drugs and to sell those drugs to you. Now, here in America, they also have a job. It's to sell credit. It's to sell credit cards. That's why they're constantly advertising credit and credit cards. And they're also purveyors of disease. And that's why they're always selling cancer and heart attack. And they have infomercials constantly on the 6 o'clock news selling you this new cancer cure. See? Now, you get what you want to buy. And so in 1900, we didn't want to buy much cancer, so about one person in 33 bought in his lifetime. Today, one out of every two buy into cancer. In 1900, debt was looked upon as being a crime, being a sin, being something that you wanted to avoid. We didn't have very much of it. But over time, the purveyors, you know, the people that are selling, the people that are making money off of debt, are out hustling customers to buy their product. So there's a number of interesting concepts concerning debt and how to get out of debt, and people are constantly, you know, writing. And there's a lady here by the name of Liz Weston, and she writes for MSNBC Money, and she wrote an article here. If you want to get this article, it's from articles.moneycentral.msn.com. Liz Pullman Weston. She wrote an article here called The Real Reason That You're Broke, and she says, for a huge number of troubled debtors, it all began with a car. Too much car. Financed too long. Traded too soon. Well, shucks, you know, for many of you people, it's too many drugs. You know, I could make the same comment concerning your house or anything else in life. What is it that we have to give up? Do we have to give up our cars? Do we have to give up our homes? Do we have to live under a bridge and walk everywhere we go? You know, it is true, depending upon who you are, where you are, and what your education level is, you're spending too much money on all the wrong things, and then you can't make ends meet at the end of the month. The bottom line is, you can't manage money. Most Americans cannot manage money any more than a heroin addict can manage heroin. And so what are we going to do? Give this heroin addict more heroin? Give him the keys to the heroin chest and say, here, guard this for me. I would contend that the place that you need to get started is to educate yourself on how to manage money. People that have money are people that are able to manage money. You can rest assured that Bill Gates can manage money. There's just no doubt in my mind. He not only makes a lot, he can manage it. And Buffett and the people that are billionaires. These are people, especially if they're self-made billionaires or millionaires. You know, when a guy goes out and makes the money, you can rest assured that he can manage it. People who fall into money, such as the people that win the lotteries, they're broke in 5 years. The statistical averages are, if you win the lottery, win $100 million in 5 years, you'll be flat broke. There was a guy out in California named Rodney King. You know, he got beat up. He won $3 million, more money than this guy had ever seen in his lifetime. In 5 years, he was broke. He went through the $3 million. So it's not how much money you make or how much money you've got. It's how do you hang on to it? How do you manage it? How do you husband it? How do you make it grow? And so for that, there's no end of people who are here to advise you on how to manage your money. If you come into a little money, you'll have 15 friends over there telling you how to manage it. You don't know how to manage it, and neither do they. They don't have any money, and the bottom line is, people that don't have money are not the people that you want to go to get advice on how to manage money. And if you want to learn to manage money, you go to people that have money. The guy that's got it had to have gotten it somehow. I just remember a story named J. Paul Getty, or a guy by the name of J. Paul Getty. His daddy gave him $5 million when he was a kid. He said, "That's your inheritance, son. $5 million bucks. Back in the days when $5 million was a bundle of money. So J. Paul went out and invested his $5 million, and he turned it into $1 billion or two or three, when a billion was a lot of money. Now, there was a guy, a young fellow, that went out, and he could manage money, he could make money, and he went out and he demonstrated that. One of his characteristics was that his mansion, he had a big house, you know, he had a mansion over in England. He had a pay telephone. People say, "Well, could I use the telephone?" "Certainly, certainly, right over there." And when you went over to use the telephone, you had to put in money, because it was a pay telephone. He had had a pay telephone put into his house. That's been my experience, too. You know, when some guy says, "Hey, can I use your telephone?" He gets on your telephone, runs the bill up. J. Paul Getty was smart enough to figure out, I don't want to be rude to people and tell them, "No, you can't get a telephone here. You can't use a telephone." He put in a pay telephone and said, "You know, if you want to use a telephone." And in those days, we didn't have cell phones. Now, that's a small thing, but it's a small example of how to manage your wealth. Now, let me go back to how to manage your wealth. I don't think you should give up Starbucks. I don't think you should give up your house, your home, your automobile, or anything else you got. After all, that's the thing that makes your standard of living. If you can afford it, then you should go buy it. My wife says, if you've got it, flaunt it. If you've got it, flaunt it. Okay, but if you don't have it, there's not much to flaunt. So I've got a very simple technique. There's no big mystery about it. I told you this, I think, in the first broadcast in this series. I said, always save half. Learned that from an immigrant who came into the United States. He not only came in here and made it big, he taught me how to make money. And I'm just going to pass it on to you. Same thing. There's a little book here called The Richest Man in Babylon. Heck of a good book. The principle of making money off of interest and usury is unscriptural, and it's backwards in that regard. But there's a lot of neat principles in this book. And one of them is, work is my friend. Americans believe work is their enemy. They hate work. They're taught to despise work from the day they enter college. That work is for Mexicans. Work is for somebody else. It's for blue-collar people. It's for uncouth, uneducated people. Work is something to be loathed and avoided at all costs. I don't see it that way. I see work as my friend. I go out and work. If I'm not working here in my office or in my school, I'm out picking up rocks, or I'm working with my cattle or doing something else. But here's the principle, very simple. Always save half and pay yourself first. Always save half, pay yourself first. Always save half, pay yourself first. If you follow that rule, you'll have money. And it won't take you very long to learn how to manage it. Now, let me show you how this works. Let's suppose that you're making $1,000 a month. A paltry amount. Now, the people that are making $1,000 a month, these Mexicans coming up here from Mexico working for minimum wage, they're sending home the surplus. Americans are sitting here complaining that they can't make ends meet, and the people that come up and want to work and actually go to work and take the lowest paying jobs at minimum wage, for crying out loud, making beds in the Holiday Inn, or they're out here working, ditch digging work, are sending money home. Now, how is that possible? Well, old Frank gave me the clue. He said to me when I was 15 years old, he said, "Now, if you went to Portugal where I came from, you'd starve to death. You couldn't make it there." So when I started my working career, I started with a fellow named Frank Rocha. He was still farming with horses back in 1955. Now, everybody had gotten off of horses, you know, by about 1950. But Frank still had horses. And they're a little slow. They're a little more cumbersome, but they don't burn any gasoline either. And the Amish, to this day, they still farm with horses. Now, the Amish are the only people in America that can make money on corn at $1 a bushel. Everybody else would starve to death growing corn, getting paid $1 a bushel. The Amish, they make money at it. And that's because they don't have any tractors. They're still farming with horses. Now, they may not make as much money as the guy with the tractor, but they hang on to more of it, and that's what counts. It's not how much money you make. It's how much money do you keep. It's not, I make $100,000 a year. It's, I saved $5,000 last year. I have 5 acres free and clear. I have 10 cows that I own. That's what wealth is all about. Americans, I think, have it backwards. They're striving, constantly striving to make more and more money. But they don't figure how much do they save. In fact, Americans have a negative savings rate. Americans are in debt. It's obvious that Americans do not know. It's a general rule. Not every American, but, you know, it's a general rule. Americans do not know how to manage their money. So old Frank told me, he said, now you always save half. And he said, once you learn to always save half, he said, you can spend the other half on anything your heart desires. But never spend more than you've got in your pocket. Now remember I told you the story a little earlier. If you get a credit card in your pocket, you walk into the hardware store. You got $65 in your pocket and you intend to buy $30 worth of goods. As you're walking through the hardware store, you'll see some things that you can't live without. And you'll pick those up, and they total $75. Nobody has ever walked out of a hardware store with $75 worth of desire, $65 in his pocket, and a credit card. And I explained to you, I said, you're going to take that credit card out, and you're going to pay the $75, keep the cash, and run up and spend more than you can afford. Now, if you follow these two rules, very simple. Always save half and pay yourself first. That's rule number one. Number two, never spend more than you've got in your pocket. Now you see, most of you people don't carry money in your pocket. You carry your money in the bank. And your bank makes it very easy for you. They give you a checking account. And they say, well, if you need to spend more money, that's okay. We got this check protection plan. I had that check protection plan. That means that when your checking account goes down to zero, you can keep writing checks up to a certain amount. In my case, it was $25,000. I had a business account with the Bank of Idaho, and the Bank of Idaho gave me a line of credit for $25,000 on my checking account. So I could run my checking account down to $25,000 negative, or I could have $25,000 positive in there. Now, when you're a businessman, that's pretty handy. You know what I mean? It's pretty handy. It's very bad, though, in trying to teach you how to manage your money. Because if you have to live within your means, if you discipline yourself to living within your means, you'll always have money. The problem is you went to college and it gave you a credit card while you were in college. Mom and dad have credit. Mom and dad are in debt. And so like a drug addict, you've learned to be a druggie because mom and dad made you into a druggie. You're the product of your home. You're the product of your parents. You're the product of all of the things that have come into your mind, your school teachers, your influences, Uncle Buster and Aunt Bessie. Stop thinking about it. You know what you know. You practice what you practice because that was what was taught to you. All right, now, if you don't like the results that come from it, then you need to make a change. I woke up one day and I said, I don't like this debt. At least $12,000 worth of debt on my 28 credit cards. I said, I don't like this. And I'm going to make a change. So I tore up the credit cards and sent them back, paid the debt off, and then I've gone credit card free from that point on. I've been drug free from that point on. Hey, I've been clean. Now, if you can manage credit cards and you pay your debt every month, you can manage credit cards, that's okay. You can have one. If you're making payments on your credit card, you cannot manage your credit card, you can't manage debt, It's obvious you're a junkie, therefore you need to get rid of them. That's simple enough to figure out. You don't have to be very smart. Now, if you say to yourself, I can't live without my credit cards, what you're saying is, the pain from debt isn't nearly as good as the pleasure that I get from the credit card. So there's no hope for helping you. There's nothing can be done for you. A drug addict that says the pleasure from the hit is better than being clean, son, there's nothing we can do for you. Not until you get to the point where you say, you know, this stuff's bad for me and I'm going to get off of it. And once you get to that point, now we can do something for you. If you want to make money, you can do that. And especially you people that have degrees and education and college. There's no reason why you can't make as much money as an immigrant that comes to America. It's that you have been taught incorrectly. You've got some bad, bad habits. All right, now there's a second factor that comes in here. After you have saved half, go out and spend on anything you want. You like Starbucks? Go to Starbucks. But here's the self-enforcing part that goes with it. You never spend more than is in your pocket. So when you walk into Starbucks, how much is in your pocket? Well, only half what you earned. Now, with half as much money in your pocket, $500 instead of $1,000, with only $500, how much Starbucks are you going to buy? You're going to buy half as much as you bought before. That's all. And you'll never overspend because you reach in your pocket, and if you don't have the money in your pocket, you don't buy the Starbucks. And here's what you're going to find. You'll reach in your pocket and you get $23, and Starbucks is $3.50. And you'll look at that and you'll say, oh my gosh, I've only got $23 and I got to make that last until. Therefore, I don't think I'll buy that Starbucks. I think I'll buy the 99-cent cup of coffee at 7-Eleven. It's automatic and it's an enforceable modality that works like a shot. I don't overspend at all. When I walk out of the house, I have so many dollars in my pocket. And I know how many dollars I got in my pocket, and I got to fill the machine with gas. And that's going to be a $100 bill. Used to be a $10 bill. So you used to walk out of the house with $10 in your pocket. You had to go fill the tank, and you could spend the change. Today, nothing's changed. You walk out of the house with a $100 bill, you fill the tank, and you can spend the change. Prices are up 10 times. Your wages are up 10 times. You still got to save half. That's all. Bottom line. Now listen to this. Getting the most money working or being a stay-at-home mom. This thing of getting you women to get out into the marketplace. When I was a kid, for a woman to work outside the home was a shame. It was the prima facie evidence that the breadwinner in the home couldn't support his family, so he's got to put his wife to work. And today, they have sold that to America's women. You women are out there working like a bunch of Russians carrying hod on a construction job. Hey, listen, if you want to go out and work, you know, get after it. But I want to tell you that my wife doesn't work outside our home. Oh, she works, and she produces a bunch, and she supports me to a lifestyle that I've become accustomed to. But she doesn't go out here and work for Joe Sixpack over here checking out groceries at the grocery store. Or I see women, you know, all the time. I go into a store and I see all these women working. I say, how come these women aren't home baking brownies and baking cookies and teaching their children and doing something intelligent or constructive? Well, they're out here in the marketplace because they can't make ends meet. They're paying income tax and Social Security. And that's one of the first things that you'll discover here is that when you leave home, ladies, to go work, now all of a sudden you got income tax and Social Security to pay, you got child care to pay, and you got transportation to pay. And when you get through paying all those expenses, and you got to have a wardrobe to go with the job, you get all through. How much do you have left over at the end of the month? I think you ladies, if you did your math, you'd find out that you're working for about $2 or $3 an hour. Now listen to this article here. It comes from AssociatedContent.com. It's www.associatedcontent.com. Listen to this, just 3-4 paragraphs. Some of the outer fringes of the feminist movement are telling other women that they should not be stay-at-home moms. And instead, they should go back to work because being a stay-at-home mom is nothing more than female servitude. I'm going to underline that. You ladies out there, female servitude, they call this. These are the feminists out there. Now, I was telling you something, see? Do you want to be in servitude at home baking brownies for your husband and kids? No, no. You want to work at General Motors or Bank of America. Okay, now that you got the pitch, let's see how much money's in it. They say that women should be able to work out of the home whenever and wherever possible. My God, whenever it's possible, you should get the hell out of the house, ladies. And wherever. Take a job any place but in your own home. Wherever and whenever. Get out of your home. That's what the pitch is. I'm sitting here asking, well, why would you want to leave your home, lady? And who are you going to work for? Bank of America? How much is Bank of America going to pay you? Bank of America is going to pay you $10 an hour if you'll be a teller in the bank. And you can be independent. Independent of what? Your husband. So that you can become dependent on Bank of America? Excuse me, boys and girls, but freedom is not exchanging one master for another, is it? I mean, if you're dissatisfied with your husband, why don't you divorce him and get rid of him? But why make yourself a slave to Bank of America? I don't know. They go on and they say, however, staying at home is a choice that many mothers choose to make, and oftentimes it does make a lot of financial sense, too. Some people think that the mother working and putting the kids in daycare is the only way to go. But there are some creative ways that being a stay-at-home mom can make a lot of sense. All right, so it can make a lot of sense for you to stay home. My wife stays home. She bakes brownies. And she supports me at the same time. My wife is so smart, and she doesn't even have to go out and work at Bank of America, and she can support me. Does a good job at it, too. All right, now figure out what it's costing you ladies over here for daycare, transportation, got to have a car, and clothes. All right, take those three things over there. Now, let's add to that taxes. And lunch, and then put down miscellaneous expenses. All right, now when you get a number off of there, let's say it's $500 a month. How much are they paying you? $1,000 a month. So the net then is $500. Are you taking home $500 a month for all this effort? How many hours a month are you working, ladies? And then take the number of hours that you're working and then divide that into the 500, and I'll tell you how many dollars an hour you're getting paid. Now, do you want to work for $2 or $3 an hour or $5? You want to work for minimum wage out here at the bank? Maybe you could stay at home and make more money at home than you're making working out in the workplace. Has that ever occurred to you? I had a guy here one time, he's an electrician. He got $25 an hour working in Boston. He got $12 an hour working in Clinton, Arkansas. He commuted to Boston, kept an apartment in Boston, and then twice a month he'd commute home and take care of his family's services, and he'd go back to Boston and work. I asked him one day, I said, why do you travel from Clinton, Arkansas, all the way to Boston to work as an electrician? Is there no work in Clinton? He says, oh, no, there's plenty of work in Clinton, but they only pay $12 an hour. So I make twice as much money working in Boston. And I said, well, how much does it cost you to commute back and forth to Boston, keep an apartment, and keep these two households, one in Clinton with your family and one in Boston? And he looked at me kind of with a blank stare, and he said, well, I don't know. I said, I find it hard to believe that you can commute twice a month to Boston, keep an apartment in Boston, keep separate residence in Clinton, Arkansas with your wife and kid, and do that on $12 an hour, which is, you know, the difference between working in Clinton and working in Boston. And sure enough, the guy did the arithmetic. He said, you know, I kept track of my expenses, and You know, I would actually make more money. At the end of the month, I would have more money left in my pocket after taxes. You know, after expenses, after the whole thing is said, and I have more money in my pocket if I just stayed here and worked in Clinton. I said, you know, that's what I thought. Now, this guy wasn't dumb. I mean, this guy didn't come from the Azores. He didn't swim across the Rio Grande River. Hell, he had a degree from college. He was a commercial electrician. He's making pretty good money, $25 an hour. How much is he making? 25 times 2,000 hours a year, making $50,000 a year. And hell, that was 20 years ago. 20 years ago, this guy was making $50,000 a year. When it bought 30% more, it'd be like about $80,000 today. And he figured that he could make more money working in Clinton. You ladies out there, if you put the pencil, you know, to the paper over here, I think you're going to find about the same thing. Now listen, there are businesses out here that you can do at home. And I showed you here a couple of three stories where people left the city, went out to the country, and are making more money living in the country. I mean, they got more money in their pockets left over. Now, I told you, I used to make $1 million a year. I don't make $1 million a year today, but I put more money in my pocket every month than I ever did when I was running the Atlantis Manufacturing Company. Now, it's not how much money you make, it's how much money do you keep. That's the bottom line. How much do you keep? And you people that are living from paycheck to paycheck, don't keep any. You people that are in debt, don't keep any. You need to get debt-free. That means zero COD. Just write it down in your paper. Zero COD, cash on delivery. No credit. People ask me, well, how's your credit? Really, really sucks. I don't have any credit at all. Nobody would lend me a quarter. And if you did, you'd have to be stupid. But then, I don't have to ask anybody for money. I've got money. So if I've got money, I don't need to ask for it. And so if I don't ask for it, I don't need debt. And if I don't need debt, then I must have wealth. That's what the bottom line is. What you want to have is two nickels to rub together. So I put two nickels here in my top desk drawer. And then every morning I come down here, pick up my two nickels, I rub them together, and I put them back. You should have two nickels to rub together. And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and we're open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log, our schedule, and the archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code, 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, they're accurate, and they're correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate, and that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed in whole or in totality by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. But these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers or the sponsors or the management or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about credit and debt. Credit is not against the law. It doesn't violate the scriptural law. And if you want to borrow, that doesn't violate the scriptural law either. Paying usury and interest and collateralizing the debt does. And there's not very many people that are going to loan you any money, loan you anything, sell you anything on time that are not going to collateralize the debt or are not going to charge you usury and interest. And if you pay usury and interest or collateralize the debt, now you're in violation of the scriptural law. And there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. So if you're having a hard time making ends meet and you're fighting with the old lady all the time, it's because you're in debt. Most arguments, most marital problems are caused by money. Do you know that? So when you're going to your marriage counselor and you know, the marriage counselor says, okay, let's take a look at your debt structure over here. You can just about figure out. The reason that you're having marital problems is because of the debt. Your old lady is spending too much money. Well, then why don't you bring her under control? Very simple. You give her half as much money and let her go out and spend it all. As old Frank Rocha told me, he said, it doesn't make any difference how much money you make. You spend it all. You spend all of it. Keep up that good work. Keep up the habit. Pay yourself first. Always save half. And then spend it all. Everything that's left. At the end of the month, make sure you spend it all. And it'll be just as tough for you to make ends meet. But I'll tell you, you'll have half the money that you make. Half of what you create and produce in life, you'll have at the end of the year. 5 years from now, what you have worked for over the past 5 years, what have you got to show for it? Well, of everything that I created and produced over the past 5 years, I still have physical possession of 50% of it, one half. I paid myself first. I still got half of it. I can go back over the last 20 years. How much do I have? What do I have to show for 20 years of labor? Half of everything I created and produced over the past 20 years, I still have physical possession of it. I still got it. And that's what wealth is. That's what wealth is. Wealth is measured in land. How much land do you own? No, wait a minute. Not how much land are you in possession of. Not how much land are you managing for the bank. How much land do you actually own, free and clear, that belongs to you? That's what wealth is. How many cars have you got? I'm not talking about how many cars do you drive. How many cars do you register every year? Or how many insurance policies are you paying on for these three or four cars that you got? I said, how many cars do you own? Not share with the bank or GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. How many cars do you own free and clear? That's the measure of wealth. And if your answer is, I don't own my home, I don't own any land, I don't own a car, I don't own a big screen TV, well, then you're flat ass broke. Or as Mo Granny used to say, you got a pot to piss in, a place to put it, or a window to throw it out of. How would you like to make a change? That's the bottom line. How would you like to make a meaningful change? All right, now we're getting down to where the rubber meets the road. Now, I told you the magic secret. Very simple. Write it down. Always save half. Pay yourself first. Because you're going to spend it all. And if you don't have one half of it to spend. It's gone. Well, then, you can spend all that's left. Go to Starbucks, spend it on your car. The only thing is, you'll only be able to afford half as much car as you've got today. Instead of the BMW, you'd be driving a Chevrolet. So what? The world's full of people that drive Chevrolets. I drive one. I haven't suffered from any great stigma because I drive a Chevy instead of a Lexus. It's got four wheels on it. Gets me from here to there. That's the purpose behind an automobile. It's to get you from here to there. It may even be, especially if you live in the city. I remember my stepfather, Howard. Well, Howard lived in San Francisco, California. He didn't even own an automobile. I asked him about that one time. I said, "Hey, Howard, how come you don't have a car?" And he said, "What would I do with it?" I said, "Well, you would drive it." And he said, "Where would I drive it?" "Well, out in the country, or you'd go someplace." I said, "Well, if I've got someplace that I want to go, and then I need a car, I go down and rent one." He said, "I live in San Francisco. Do you know what it costs to park a car, to keep a car here in San Francisco?" I said, "No, I don't know." So I said, "Well, it costs you about $5 a day for the parking. You got to have a garage to put it in. There's no parking out on the streets. You got to put money in the parking meters. If you don't, they tow your car away." And he said, "Then there's the cost, and then there's all of the incidentals that go with it." And he says, "Now listen." And he said, "It costs, in those days, it cost you a nickel, I believe it was, or a dime, to ride the streetcar." I think it was a dime. 1957, 58, 59, you know. Maybe it was a quarter, but I don't think it hit a quarter until after the 60s. You know, for a dime, you can ride the streetcar from one end of San Francisco to the other. He says, "I put a dime in, I go downtown, I go to work, I put a dime in, I come back home. I've got my apartment. I live here in the city. I've got all the amenities." Now, this is in the days, boys and girls, before credit cards. And before credit cards, people had to manage their money. Now that people have credit cards, we let the banks manage our money for us. And like this lady, you know, being a stay-at-home mom, listen, being a stay-at-home mom makes more money. I showed you that a little earlier. You know, it makes you more money than if you go out and work. Now, you know, there can be some exceptions to that. Maybe you're out here and you can afford the $500 a month for the child care and the extra taxes and all that goes with it, you know. And if you can, well, put the pencil to it, sharpen it on both ends, do the arithmetic. Make sure that you're getting paid something. You know, when I read these articles, you know, that say you don't want female servitude. What they're saying is you don't want female servitude to your husband. You want female servitude to the bank or to corporate America. You want to be a corporate slave rather than a homemaking slave. I'm sitting here saying, ladies, why don't you get your freedom back? Why don't you decide what you want to do? I mean, it's a wild new concept. I mean, if you want to work, get out there and do it. But don't you think you ought to get paid for it? I've seen people over here put the numbers to it, and they're working for $2 or $3 an hour, and I'm sitting here saying, you're working for less than a Mexican coming across the border, for crying out loud. At least they get minimum wage. You're over here working outside the home, ladies, and you're getting less than minimum wage? Huh? Come on. Come on. Let's start counting, shall we? All right, now listen to this. This same Liz Pullman, writing for MSNBC, she says, if you're constantly broken, you can't figure out why. The answer may be sitting in your driveway. Americans are spending more on their vehicles than ever before, more than $8,000 a year on average, and it's driving some to the breaking point. Listen, you know, when I was a kid, most people didn't have cars. In World War II, I can only remember the Mitchells that had a car during World War II. I mean, in our whole neighborhood, only one family had a car. It was a 1929 or 30 Model A Ford sedan. Four-door sedan. Model A Ford. The only ones that had a car. 1943. I guess they must have had a ration card to go along with it. The rest of us didn't, so we didn't have a car. And we got along quite nicely. Now, I'm not telling you not to have an automobile. I'm just telling you that $8,000 a year for a car. You know, as soon as you start saving half and you pay yourself first, you'll have $4,000 for the car. It'll still have you on the ragged edge. You'll still have trouble making ends meet. I told you about Larry Flint. Hell, he wrote me a check for $10,000. Guy made $12 million a month. Wrote me a crummy check for $10,000 and it bounced twice. The rich people in America are having as much trouble making ends meet as the poor. Get used to it. Everybody has a hard time making ends meet. Pay yourself first. Save half. Cut your living standard just exactly in half. Instead of an $8,000 car, you drive a $4,000 car. That's all. That's what I do. Now, I could probably go down and buy a new Lexus. I'll bet you if I put my mind to it, I could probably, you know, they offer you a Cadillac for $500 a month. They got lease programs over here. I see them advertised all the time. I said, God, I could afford $500 a month. Wait a second. $500 a month, that's $6,000 a year. For less than $6,000, I could go out and buy me a car. I can go to the auto auction. I went to the auto auction one time. I paid $2,000 for a 1989 Chevrolet Astro van, Chevy Astro. I still got it. Runs like a top. Heck of a neat van. $2,000. Why do I need to go spend $20,000 on a car? It's got four wheels and it gets me from here to there. Paint ain't too good on it. It's got a little rust. But, you know, still goes from here to there. Now, you make do and you get by. And that's the way we used to live back in the Depression years, you know. And you get used to it because you're coming into a depression. The American economy is in recession today. We're headed to hyperinflation, and we're going into a deflation. That's depression right after the hyperinflation. How do I know that? That's what happened in Germany in 1923. That's what happened in every South American country that has spent beyond its means, has gone into hyperinflation. That's what's going to happen in America. How do I know that? History repeats itself. Get used to it. I'm not going to change it. I'm not going to prevent the Great Depression of the United States in the 21st century. Hell, we went through this in 1783 to 1787. We went through it from 1929 to 1937. We've been through recession since then, and we're going to go through it again. Make up your minds to it. Get used to it. And get this. There's great money, great profits to be made in depressions. Did you know that? The Depression era of 1929 to 1937 made millionaires of many, many folks that got out there and hustled the buck. I think I can make as much money or more in a depression as I can in boom times. Not doing the same things, but doing something different, being more creative. And that's what business is all about. Business, especially private business, is in finding a need and filling it. Find a need and fill it. And here in our business school, I can show you 69 stories. 69 different stories of real people just like you that are out here making money hand over fist. And always saving half. And they've got wealth. I mean, these are people that if they wanted to go out and buy a Lexus, they could go out and buy one. But they don't, because they all know any businessman worth his salt, any businessman as opposed to any business boy, would know that buying a new car is a bad investment. It doesn't make economic sense. See, kids, it doesn't make economic sense to pay $20,000 for a car that's going to lose $5,000, 25% of its value in the first year. It doesn't make sense to spend $50,000 for a car that's going to lose $12,500 of its value in the first year. Boys and girls, it doesn't make economic sense to buy a new car. Now, I'm an old man. I've never owned a new car, never bought a new car. I don't have a new car. And if I live to be 110, I'm never going to have a new car. I'm a businessman. It doesn't make economic sense to have a new car. Do I have a car? You bet. Do I have two cars? You bet. Have I got three cars? Yeah. Yeah. Do I own them? Every one of them. Free and clear? You bet. Can I afford them? You bet. Can I fill the tank? You bet. Am I complaining about $3, $4, and $5 gas? No. No. And by the way, here in America, gasoline is going to $6 a gallon. Make up your minds to it. $6 a gallon. And when gasoline is $6 a gallon, I'll still be driving my three cars. I'll still be paying $6 a gallon. Instead of $100 to fill up my tank, it'll take $200 to fill up the tank. Okay. Will I like it? Probably. I'm not complaining about the prices. That's what hyperinflation's all about. Get used to it. That's what's coming. Now, can you support that hyperinflation? You need to be making more money. And I don't think the Bank of America is going to pay you twice as much money just because prices double. But I don't think they're in that business. In fact, they're in the process of offshoring their jobs. IBM is moving its operations offshore. Halliburton moved to Dubai. Listen, the big multinational corporations are going to continue doing business in America with their headquarters in some other country around the world. They got no loyalty to America. And it's up to you and me to start deciding for ourselves, you know, do we want to work for corporate America for peanuts, or do we want to work for ourselves and make some money? And that's what our business school is all about. In fact, our business school is patterned after the Mosaic Law and the Ten Commandments. And it's my contention that you'll make more money practicing the Ten Commandments than practicing the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now, that's been my personal experience. That's been my observation. I think if you test it, you'll see it. Now, of course, that's your decision to make in life. If you want to continue working for Bank of America, get after it. If you want to keep paying income tax, that's another one here. Let me just mention this one. I teach a class on tax and status. Do you know what your income tax is, kids? You're paying 17% income tax and 16% Social Security. Add those two together, that's one-third, 33%. 33% you're paying on those two taxes. Do you know how many taxes you got to pay? 14. 14 taxes. The top two, Social Security and income tax, take 33%. Have you ever stopped to think that maybe you should stop having income? Now, I'm not a tax protester. I'm not suggesting that you stop paying your income tax. People that have income need to pay income tax. People that have property need to pay property tax. If you don't want to pay the income tax, has it ever occurred to you to stop having income? Somebody said to me one time, well, they get kind of snotty, well, if you don't have income, how are you going to live? And I got an answer for that. Boys and girls, I don't have any income, or very little. I avoid income like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Sometimes some income does slip by. I got to concede once in a while, somebody gives me some income. But I have been able to keep my income under the filing minimum. This year, I believe it's $8,400. So I'm working my heart out in the year 2007. I'm working my heart out to make sure that I don't make $8,400. I got to make $8,399.99, but I got to avoid $8,400. You ever heard anybody say that? I'm working my heart out to limit my income. I'm trying to keep my income under $8,400. And they get kind of snotty with me, and they say, well, how are you going to live? The answer is, I live very, very, very well, thank you, without any income. Now, before some socialist came up with this idea of income to go along with the income tax, which is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, we had property in this country, and we had people that were out working, and we had people that were making money without income. And then there's Social Security. Boys and girls, Moses did not retire on Social Security. The Israelites that came out of Egypt didn't have Social Security, and they saved 16% in the interim. Now, they came along and sold us Social Security, and God bless them, I'm not opposed to Social Security. If you want Social Security, get after it. I don't want it. I don't want to pay for it. I don't want to draw it. I don't want to participate in it. I don't want the number. I don't want anything to do with it, and I don't. And it saves me 16%. Now, coupled with that 17% and that 16%, boys and girls, I only have to make two-thirds as much as you do to live just as well. Don't I? In fact, I mentioned this to you the other day. To live the $100,000 lifestyle in Hartford, Connecticut, to net $20,000 of mad money at the end of the year, I only need to make
$40,000 here to net $20,000 of mad money living out here in the country. And I showed you that a little earlier in the series. You need to be debt-free, and you need to be working outside of income. You know, as Taco Bell says, think outside the bun. Can you think outside of income? I know it's going to stretch your imagination there a little bit, but why don't you write for our free general law CD package, and let me tell you a little bit more. There was life before income tax and Social Security, and I contend that there will be life after income tax and Social Security. Now, there was life before debt, and there will be a life after debt. There was life before credit cards, and there will be a life after credit cards. And there was life before television, there will be life after television. You know, it's the way life is. What we need in life is food, clothing, and shelter, and anything beyond that's a luxury. So we've been talking about these luxuries. And Americans have been deceived into believing that, you know, things like satellite TV is a necessity. Television's a necessity. An automobile is a necessity. And a 2,400 square foot house is a necessity. It's nonsense. What is necessary is what you can afford. And what you can afford is what you have left over after you've paid yourself first. And you always save half. Now, once you've done that, you'll start accumulating wealth. Once you start accumulating wealth, now you can go out and buy, sell, and trade. Once you've got some money to buy, sell, and trade with, all of a sudden you'll find out that you can make money and develop real wealth. I never developed any real wealth while I was in debt, never developed any real wealth working on a job. So if you want to follow George Bush with a job, you know, that's fine. And I've been an employee. I tested it. And I decided it wasn't for me. And I tried debt. And I figured out, you know, it took me quite a long time. I'm a slow learner. That debt wasn't the way for me either. Now, the Bible does not have good words about debts and debtors. It speaks of them in a negative context. It's not good for you. It's not illegal to be in debt. It's not a crime. The usury and interest and collateral, that's the crime. So if you're going to borrow money, don't pay interest. If you're going to lend, don't charge it. I'm a lender, not a borrower. But I can work either side of the street. And I can make a profit on either side of the street. So can my wife. And so can you. So why don't you write for our free General Law CD package? Remember, that CD package is free of charge. Doesn't cost you anything. We offer a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Let me see if I can show you, and as we have so many other students, how to get out of debt, how to stay out. Hey, I'm about out of time again. You're having fun. Your time passes very rapidly. So let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet daily. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. Our time's about up. We've got to leave it right there. So let me remind you that we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.